when I'm 64. Well, it's that time of the week again, everybody. This is the Age Stage. My name is Brodie Guzet, and once again, I'm flying solo under the watchful eyes of our favourite sponsors with Peter and Stuart, who are here today. Vicky is away on holiday, and will be next week as well. So that's going to be, and that will be actually my last show for a 3-week period. But Vicky will be in the pilot seat with Brendan, our station manager, acting as the navigator. But for this week, for our first session, I wanted to talk about some of the issues that we visited a year ago. Now, it was just over a year ago when the show started. And we, at that time, explored the fundamental questions of things like, how do you know when it is time to consider first changing either your whole lifestyle or potentially moving into a retirement village, or if you've gone past that and you actually need to accept some sort of government care package, now be that at home or in a place that offers residential care. So we're going to explore that today. And after that, we have, after we've looked at the incisive and highly intelligent insights from the two people that matter the most to this show, we will be discussing something that is completely different. We're going to be talking to Chez Cantley from Right Forever, and she is doing something for, and I don't want to be a show spoiler here, but she's doing something for senior citizens, and particularly in homes where people have memory issues, that is completely different and completely original. So, now, this is normally where I would press a button and we'd burst into music, but I can't do that because I'm trying to cover off what we're going to do. So we're just going to invite the boys in, assume that they're all sitting down and sitting comfortably, and I think it's time to look over those past issues and first of all see if anything in the last 12 months might have had a bearing with anything so far to do with the changes of what the government says might happen when you are looking to change your lifestyle, or indeed when you're trying to need for care. So without any further ado, it's time to welcome Peter and Stuart. Tom isn't with us today. And gentlemen, on that question, your time starts now.
Hi, Brodie. How are you going?
Terrific.
Where's Vicky?
Oh, don't.
That's hello, Stuart.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
You two know each other.
Brodie?
Yes, it's so good to see you.
We've been separated in the room like two naughty little boys. He's put me on one side and Stuart's on the other.
I've done that for a reason.
Because I think that's why Vicky's not here. But yeah. Brodie's gradually easing her out.
Well, but
I think
I'm no, the next no. Time. Young Stuart has a propensity to go off mic.
Does he?
Yes, he does.
Does he?
So, oh, does he?
Well,
oh.
He does in here. If he were sitting there, he would. But out of, I can say it's because he's not here. The worst is Tom.
So lean in and concentrate, Stuart. Yes. Focus,
yeah,
focus.
But I don't like that particular microphone. It doesn't work well for me. Hopefully this one does.
Oh, God, we'll have to get a new microphone. Come here, new microphones, please.
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Money's no object.
Now, first of all, has anything changed in the last 12 months that might seem indicate a shift in picking a time to move into village or into care? Has anything fundamentally changed?
A lot has fundamentally changed, actually.
Right. Okay, well, let's start ticking them off. What would they be?
With regards of people living at home, the home care regime has changed totally since we spoke a year ago, hasn't it, Stuart?
So certainly the government are trying to promote home care as an option and releasing more and more packages, so the stories go. On the ground, there's not much evidence that more packages are available, but there was an announcement this week.
There was.
Or late last week, of successful package holders from the government's allocation round, and that will be a good thing. You know, most people would probably choose to stay in their current home.
Yep.
And if they only have low-level care needs, and they're probably better managed at home, in a familiar environment, wherever you choose to call home. And I think that's the important thing, Brodie. But Peter will understand the significance of that phrase, because home is where the heart is. It doesn't matter with it, whether in your case, your 20 acres in Turek, or Peter's McMansion down here on Oliver's Hill.
My Miro in Port Phillip Bay.
Or my caravan.
Yeah, or your caravan. Home is where the heart is. And that may be a retirement village, because that's just a home.
Yep.
It may be you choose to live in a hotel.
But the government say they're trying to change this, but is there a tipping point where the government says, I'm sorry, it's actually too expensive to look after you at your home?
No. I think it's the tipping point is risk.
Your risk.
Your health. Yeah. So I don't think the government would stipulate that it's time, but maybe your care providers would say to you, as we've talked before about a level 1, 2, 3, or 4 package. Level 4 being a really high level package, and people on level 4 probably, Stuart, it'd be fair to say, could be living in a residential aged care facility, requiring a lot of assistance with meals, medication.
There's a provider that we're actually going to visit next week in Queensland that is building apartments as a pure apartment complex and going to do the total ageing in place within those apartments, just with packages. And that's something that we've been looking at for some time, and I believe it is a good way to go. You know, it's still home. You've still got your 1 or 2 bedrooms or 3 bedrooms, as the case may be. It's familiar surroundings, and care comes to you rather than you moving to care. It'll be really interesting to see what that looks like, and I'll be able to share that with you.
But that would still be in a village-type environment, wouldn't it?
I think that is the village.
Yeah, that becomes the village.
You know, this whole apartment concept into the modern retirement village, which really is an apartment for life, as the jargon goes in certain countries around the world. So, you know, there's a lot to say about how you age in place and where you can age in place.
I'm thinking that the great thing about the government's strategy with home care and putting it together with a village is villages are sensational at looking after people's community social needs. That's what it makes a village tick.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the problem with home care in my experience at home, particularly if you're living alone in the suburbs, is that addresses people's physical needs. It does not address their social needs. And there's a whole range of anecdotal evidence that if people's social environment engages them, they have less health issues. So villages are great at engaging people, supporting people, being part of community.
And you're perfectly correct. Yeah. That is the issue with the government understanding of what ageing in place means. If you are by yourself and all your existence is waiting for the doorbell to ring to let your home carer or your district nurse or your Meals on Wheels to come in, and that's your only social direction you have for the day, that's a fairly poor existence. You know, that's not living, that's surviving. And there has to be a better way for people to look at that. And that's what villages can provide.
But age is insidious, isn't it? You can get to that stage and you actually don't realise you're at that stage. It's such a slow process.
It's funny, there's a saying that people have, which never ceases to amuse me, and it's when I'm ready. And I say to them when they say that to me, ready for what? Because the implication is when I lose my health, when I can no longer do what I need to do for myself, then I'll move into the village. And we say, well, yes, that's okay, but by gee, you're going to miss out on a fair bit, because the village is not about supporting your health needs. The village is all about supporting you socially, you being in a community.
We had this discussion last week with a very good friend who decided after retiring... I think it could be tomorrow that she actually retires, having worked in a village for the last 24 years, And we spoke to her about would she move into the village, and said probably in 10 years or so. And we thought, well, you know better.
Why wait?
Yeah, exactly. Why not make the decision earlier? If the village is freeing you up from so many things that currently constrain you in your life and provide so much more living to do, why not do it earlier rather than later?
We have a saying at the village, Glen, and I'm sure Stuart's the same, where your unit in the village, Glen, is just another house in another street in another suburb with wonderful services.
That's why the ultimate
suburb.
But that's why we phrase it that wherever you choose to call home, it doesn't matter if you live in a caravan, if on a caravan estate, or Red Robin Caravan Park. Does that still exist down your part of the world?
I don't think so.
It doesn't. Well, people choose to live in a caravan as potential nomads, despite the fact that caravan may be on the one side for the next 5 years. But it's home. It means something to them. They don't need anything more than
that. Well, assuming that people have got the ability to make the transition and have a new home, what would be the 5 indicators, either for a partner or for a family, the 5 top indicators that would make a sibling or one of the couple say, you know what, it's time? What would you...
Well, I'm thinking...
let's just start with village life first.
For the 25 years I've been sort of doing what I do, I've noticed that the people who get the best advantage of a village are what I call the planners. They are people who are constantly looking over the horizon to see what's next. And they're the people, as I define them, as they're the independent ones. They're the ones, for them, independence doesn't mean battling on in the family home, thinking that's independence. They know independence is making the right decisions for yourself at all times. There's a horrible word that I see a lot called put. And nobody wants to be put anywhere. Now, the planners are the people who engage, who research, and who look forward to a future and make sure that when the future's there, they're ready for it. I'm saying about 20% of the population are planners.
I reckon 20%
of the population are planners, and they're my clients, if you like. They're the ones that I deal with for 2 or 3 years or even longer.
So you'd say of your current population that they would predominantly all have been planners?
Yes. We do have the odd reactor. Now, I reckon 80% of the population are reactors, and they're people who really have the head in the sand and something goes wrong and they make bad decisions. They move quickly and they don't sleep on things. They don't think them through. Like a health issue will come and they think, oh, what am I going to do now? And they do silly things. So that's in my experience.
They lose a partner, which can trigger.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, and I've had people have... Now, that's different, particularly if it's something that just happens overnight, like medical disaster. We've had people where they've come in for that. Yes, they've said, oh, I've lost my partner and I don't know what to do. And I say, come and see me in a year. Mm. Go home.
So
don't make any decisions of a life-changing nature because you're not you're certainly not in the right frame of mind to do that. You should just let the future come to you and then make a decision. You'll find you'll make the right decision.
I'm slightly different to Peter, that I would have thought that most people would start to consider a retirement village. Something has happened. It may not be a major medical issue, but something has occurred to cause you to think about, should I continue living at home with or without my partner, and what does the future hold? So for me, there's generally a trigger to then say, okay, what does the future hold? So you're saying it's different, that there's generally no medical issue for your people.
Not that I'm aware of, anyway. There possibly is, but yeah.
So we've surveyed our residents over the years at a variety of times. We don't continually survey you to But yeah, most people, you know, because we asked the question, why did you come to a village? And most people would acknowledge there was a medical issue first off. But then, and say it may not be a significant issue, but there's enough for them to ponder the future.
Yeah.
So having then made, then having explored what their options are, then they become planners.
Yeah.
And they come in and then utilise the services that the village can offer. And I think, you know, that that's certainly our experience. And yeah, we've probably taken in my time, 3,000 or 4,000 people. And that would generally be the process in there. Having come to a village, then, you know, you by enjoying the social interaction, I mean, your health then becomes a slightly secondary issue.
It does. And what they all say, Stuart, they all say, wish they had done this 5 years
Correct.
Ago.
And, you know, I left it too late.
Yes.
It's the fear of the unknown, isn't it?
It is.
It is. Yeah. But, you know, I think it's becoming more common now to be viewed as just a housing option. You know, I think retirement village by its name is probably not useful. It is, you know, housing options for seniors.
Yes.
And, you know, it is just one of many housing options. You know, we have a 5 or 6% of older people would choose to live in a retirement village, as currently known.
Mm.
You know, so there's a lot of people who would choose to stay where they are or move into an apartment block or, you know, just a small group of strata title units. So they downsize to free themselves up from a quarter acre block, but still live in a smaller home, which could be a village, or it might be external to a village.
It'd be fair to say I aspire to the lifestyles of my residents. I see what they do, particularly the ones who come in young. And when I mean young, I mean post 70, 70 to 75 is about the right time, in my view, the right time to move into a village. And you can look forward to 10 to 15 years of quality lifestyle, stress-free living.
Under normal circumstances.
Under normal circumstances, yeah. With, as I said, wonderful services. I mean, I always hark back to when Chaz, talking about, someone asked him one day, why a village? What made you think of a village? And he tells the story about having the tennis court and the swimming pool, living in the suburbs on 80 blocks back when he was sort of 40 years of age, and everyone had their pool, everyone had their boat, everyone had their holiday home, and none of them used them because they were all too busy. Why do we spend all this money? Why don't we just jointly own this stuff and then share it, and share the maintenance of it? And that's, in essence, the nature of a village.
That's right. I mean, you're catering for things that you may aspire to have at home or may have some at home, and you can enjoy them in a communal environment.
And speaking of Chaz,
we should
happy birthday.
We should give Chaz
yes.
happy birthday.
He's 80. Turned 80.
And he's still working. And you say, my heavens.
Yes.
But good on him. So, yeah, big hi to Chaz and hope he has another happy couple of decades.
Absolutely. Yep.
Well, I hope he does too. I've never had the pleasure, but who knows, I might...
We might get him to come in here and...
Yeah, that'd be a good thing.
Hey? And you'll sing to him, mate. Is that what you're saying?
No, no. I wouldn't inflict that on anybody. I think he would rather take the green dream if... let me now... Can we therefore say that out of our five indicators, one of them is, I think, if I take from what you said, the chances are you've reached the age of 70, 75.
Yep.
That's an indicator. Now is the time that makes a sensible time to think.
Yep.
Allowing for other things. What other ones have we got?
Well, the health issue. So
health,
you would say a planner. Yep. The health issue is generally a really motivating driver to say if it's you that's affected by the health issue, okay, what am I going to do for the future? What happens if, you know, I fall over? What is my wife going to be left with? How is she going to cope? What are the kids going to be left with? You know, and a lot of people would rather say, I know that my care needs will be looked after in a village. If something happens, there's someone to support mum or dad, and it takes the stress off me. And I think that's equally a good motivator. Would you?
I would agree. And I think the third one would be maintenance at home. Starts to become a chore.
Yeah.
I mean, all of us...
I'm ready.
Yes, well, I'm not ready yet, but But I enjoy what I do at home, raking up the leaves at the moment.
Look, I need but some plastering done if you're available, you know, one weekend.
But I think there comes a time where you think, you know, let's get selfish and get away from all this chores and get selfish for our own needs. And a lot of people, the younger ones, when they came to the village, become avid travellers. And like this time of the year...
Yeah. Why would you want to stay in Melbourne?
20% of our village has gone north with their vans. Yep. Off they go, up the Newell Highway.
A question without notice. Yeah. What's Estelle feel about this? Estelle is Peter's wife.
My wife, we have pillow talk about this. And guess what?
You only get past the first sentence?
Yeah. She said, no. It's not for me.
Really?
It's true. So,
And that can often be the case.
Yeah.
Normally it would be the opposite way around. It's normally the wife can see the benefits of it and the male is resistive.
Yeah.
And that would be, you know, probably 75-25 split. If they're not on the one page, that would be the way. So you're in the minority group there. So how are you going to play that out?
Well, two friends of mine reserved a unit yesterday, and they're a little bit older than I, but we're good friends. And he's Tina. She's a nurse, and she can see the benefit of it. And her husband has been a bit of a goer all his life, a tradesman and a hard worker. And he said, no, that's not for me. I'd go stir crazy. And lo and behold, he rang me from towing his van north to say, Peter, I think it's time. And he's in his early 70s.
Right.
Yeah, so once again, I'm thinking what's got to him is the chores of he retired not that long ago, but he's finding it a bit of a chore and there's in his mind, there's better things to do. Yeah, so...
And I've got a dear friend, Max, who is 74 or 5 or something. And he's certainly showing his age, and he's decided to sell. He's selling up everything. He's got property, all sorts of places. So he's selling it all up. He said, "I'm going. That's enough of this." And I said, "Off you go, dear boy. Get yourself a best place. Get yourself a garden if you've got a garden. Get yourself, you know, whatever it is." And what does he buy? He buys this huge mansion up in Cairns. It's huge. It's got 5 bedrooms upstairs, 2 bedrooms downstairs, and studies and it, acres of it, and a swimming pool. And, you know, 4-car garage. And I said, Max, why?
He hasn't achieved his goals.
And he said, well, it's what his bride would have bought. And he's quite right. He's just duplicated the house, just moved it. So people get very strange.
So I think we've got, is that 3 we've got?
We've got
four?
3. No, three. Well, we've never got 4. Mm. Have we got a 5th before we go?
The other one is probably your family has moved away from your traditional inner suburb area and living
out. Good one. I like that one.
Out.
Yep.
And, you know, it's becoming more difficult for you to retain contact with them.
Yep.
So you want to move closer. And that's often a good reason to do it. You know, we've got currently talking to some people we've known for a long time. Family live down here. They live up in North Baldwin. They're both husband and wife have had health issues. And so they're considering moving down to the peninsula just to be close so they see the family.
Can you send me their names? I might send them a brochure.
No, stop touting. Gentlemen, that was fantastic. Thank you very much for your efforts today. I'm enjoying this revisit, and you've given me a few guidelines to continue, but next week I think we might carry on with it, because I'd like to talk a bit about the finances next week and what that means and see whether there are any rules that have changed.
Well, you did ask me at the start, and I said that the home care. The other one that's changed is that there's no doubt that the government are fine-tuning the income and assets test continually.
Yep.
And people, 10 years ago, you didn't need a financial planner to work out your retirement. You do now.
You do now.
If you've got any assets over and above your family home, you really need to get some professional advice on how you can do the best you can for yourself within the laws that the government currently have.
Well, let's talk about that next week.
Mm. Sounds good.
Thank you so much for that. I'm going to choose the number one piece of music I'm going out to do today is, do you know True Blue by John Williamson? Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, they played that at the MCG on Anzac service a couple of years ago.
I think it suits. It's got.
And I think it was terrific.
Take care. Lovely to see you. Look, I'll see you next week.
Yes.
John Williams, yes. Not quite. There's that magic voice you can always pick it, and he's given us some of the greatest Aussie tracks of all time. Now, my next guest is completely not different in the sense that it's very much part of that age stage process, but she is a writer, first and foremost, well, almost entirely, but foremost, she is a writer. But she has been developing an idea, which we'll be talking about shortly, that helps with cognition and memory about people's lives in aged care facilities where people may be losing some of their memory capability. But that's only part of her, because she's had a very long and strong career that's been in media, and most of it to do with writing. So the thing I'd like to cover off first is how you, and before we enter in this space of what actually it means to this senior citizen, is what is it, what has been her life that's moulded her today? Her name is Chez Cantley.
Cantley,
thank you, my dear. Chez Cantley, and she comes from Write Forever. Chez, welcome to the show.
Lovely to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
I have a secret I want to share with you.
Oh, go ahead.
The very first love of my life, mm-hmm. whose name was Sarah,
mm-hmm.
her nickname was Chez.
Oh, really?
Yes. And it wasn't
Sarah
you.
Chez. So, yeah. No, it wasn't me. Let's clear that up right now.
Yes. Yes, get that one off. But her name was Chez, and I remember her very dearly.
Mm.
Now, you've had a fascinating, full and interesting career in media and in marketing and advertising, all sorts of places.
Yes.
Tell us about your world.
Well, it kind of began as a cadet journalist, and I worked for a little local newspaper in Richmond. And as a journalist, you tend to write fairly, sometimes not very pleasant stories.
Mm.
So about the local council and nasty things they were doing and all of that. And I decided that I wanted to be a writer. I've known that since I was a child. And I thought, advertising's pretty good because you can get even a bad product and find the good part of it. And that's kind of my life. Became an advertising writer and an agency, did press TV and radio ads, and then went purely into radio and worked for 3DB, as it was back then, with Bert Newton.
Okay, so you're used to this space you're sitting
yeah,
in.
Yeah, I love it. It's like being home. It's beautiful. Yes.
So 3DB?
Yes, and Bert was absolutely wonderful as our general manager, and I was on air with him in the mornings.
Was he general manager?
Yes, he was.
Oh, so he wasn't just a pretty face?
No. He was an astounding manager too, I have to say. It just, everything about it was like a family, and Bert took care of every single person and their world. He was magnificent. Never met another manager like him. It's brilliant.
So was he still manager when you left there, or did he leave there first?
They sold the radio station and it became 3TT, a music station, and it was talk radio when it was under his helm.
Right.
When
was that? What period were you looking at?
Oh, it would have been 1988, I think.
Right, yeah.
Yes, yeah, so then went on to 3AK, worked with Uncle Roy and Darren James.
Oh, really?
And I was on air on breakfast with them and produced their program, which was a load of fun. So I was that third on-air pick-on-a-ball person. I did weather and traffic and gags, and it was great fun, and wrote a little radio series, various radio stations. And then Bert called me and said, come on, Chez, come and work with me on Good Morning Australia at Channel 10 and just add the pictures. That's all you have to do. Oh, really? I'm thinking, that's all? So,
exciting. So
TV began then, and it was a wonderful world. Went over to New Zealand, was working for a radio TV station that produced in-flight programs for Air New Zealand.
Okay.
And I'd shoot back to Australia and shoot the stories, go back to New Zealand and put them all together to the sound mix stage to get them on the plane. And on to London, and headed up three radio stations over there, their creative teams, all in the writing sense.
Oh, really?
Sense.
Where in London?
I was working at Northampton, Peterborough and Cambridge outside London and headed up those three stations.
I know Northampton very well.
Do you?
Yes.
Yeah.
I used to live in Broughton, just outside.
Oh, it's a gorgeous little place. Mm. I love it. And Kinky Boots is based there too.
Is it?
Yes, indeed.
Oh, because it was the shoe market of the world, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Or England. It was the shoe capital of England. And Kenny Everett, who is my alter ego, I suppose, he was doing radio around about that time, and he changed radio for me because he had that lovely zany yes. Issue. You know, it was part the Goons, and you know, it was a young. But you know what? I never knew that he was gay.
No, really?
No, I didn't. It yeah. never occurred to me that he was. He was just a lunatic.
Yes.
Great and great fun, but it never. Not that it makes any difference, but it just. When I heard that he'd passed away from AIDS, I think it did. That's very sad. So anyway, there you were in England. So now, yes. now, so this is all very high, you know, high pressure. This is big mainstream media, and this continues on.
Well, it did for a time. I met my husband over in London, who's he's middle management at a newspaper over there, and then he decided he loved Australia, so we came back here with our little babies, who were then 5 weeks old and 15 months old, and journeyed across the world. Arrived back here. I did a little more work for Bert, and worked for the late, great Susie Howie Publicity, and... yeah, it's just been a wonderful journey. So I've now got my own little writing business, and my big love is people. And I believe that every single person, there's walking, talking arms and legs and stories in every single body. And I just love people's stories.
Well, I'm with you. I think that we don't get our histories down, and now there's no excuse to these days with all the equipment that's available. But you've got a unique niche in that area to do with retirement village or care centres, aged care centres. Explain how it came to your mind and why you're so passionate about it.
Okay, well, it's called a life story poem. So it's like a snapshot of a person's world, a mini biography. And how it came about, I was writing real estate of all things. and
whoa,
I came
that's a leap.
Yes, and I came up with this idea when I was working for this lovely agency down in Frankston, and I said to them, look, when people sell a house, it really is quite a grueling thing, and you can leave a home after 30 years and you feel like you've left a part of you behind. So often the estate agents give a little gift to the person they've sold a house for, and I said, how about if I write a poem about that person's house and about their journey and how it's been for them and where they're going? And I got a call from an agent one day, and he was almost in tears, and he said, Shez, you've got to help me. I'm selling a house for this family. They're beautiful, and the mum has at the beginning of dementia, and she's moving into a home. I don't know what you're going to do, but can you write something? And I need to give it to them just to tell them that I care, and I don't even know if the deal's going to go through. So what kind of a man's that to do something like that? So would you like to hear this little piece that I wrote?
Would. So is this your first piece?
This was my first piece, and this sprung me into the aged care specifically. So this was for a little lady called Shirley Pretty, and it's called Eremosa Road, the next chapter. If my life were a story and were written in a book, what would it say? And I wonder, how would it start? She was blessed with 7 children and a husband who was true, a full life filled with richness, soul and heart. Would it talk about my home, sweet little Eremosa Road? Her pretty sofas, her 3 steps to the front door. The small sunshine-catching courtyard with its fuchsias in the spring and a kitchen filled with memories galore. Eremosa's an odd name. Look it up and find at best some odd meanings that mean nothing much to me. It means cultivated potato or a place up in Ontario. But Shirley's Nest is what it really means, you see. Now my story shall go on as I move to my next home and write new chapters in my Shirley Pretty book. Whilst around me all is new, I'll look back in my mind's view and bring my home right to my heart in just one look. My children of whom I spoke have been wonderful to me as I sought out a new nest in a safe tree. And I always will remember Eremosa, my old friend, my mind's soft pillow and my private sanctuary. And now I'm somewhere new, in a place with help at hand and new friends. Oh yes, there's everything I need. I won't be disloyal, Eremosa, but I'm starting all afresh. I'll till the soil and begin with new young seed. Thanks, Eremosa, for the sunny Somerville memories.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
That's lovely. So you gave this to them just as a gift, or is there Was there a purpose for it?
Well, I was. That was my job in the process of selling the house. So I wrote the gift, and they commissioned me to write the story, and it was framed, and the estate agent then gave it to the lady as a gift, and she took it with her to the home that she went to. And I just heard only last week that since that was written, she read it every single day. She had it in her room. She showed it to everybody. And when she passed away, her family read it at her funeral.
Oh.
And I just thought, oh, that's beautiful. And that's exactly what I'm aiming for, is that people have a whole story to tell. And if they have it on the door of outside their room, anybody can go up and read that in an aged care home.
Well, that's right. It's a bit like reading an advertisement for a person's entire life.
That's funny, because that's kind of what it is.
Yes. Well, it's a beautiful synthesis and pricey to be able to take a lifetime and bring it down to one A4 sheet of paper,
yeah,
with all the colour and the essence of that life to capture. That's a real skill. Do you plan to try and get this exposed more into villages and things, or
yes,
how are you taking this to market, is I suppose the real way.
I approached the homes. I began with approaching the homes direct, and I talked to the lifestyle manager,
yep,
to get their feeling on what they thought about the idea, and they all love it. Because so many homes are in chains, there might be 20 in a group, there might be 50, there might be 6 or 7. I then have to go to the manager or to the CEO, and they have to then put it to the board to see if it's something that they would take on as a company, because it's also a marketing tool.
Mm.
But for me, it's about, if I was putting my mum in a home and I went to the home that had something on the wall about every single person, I'd automatically know they really do care. That person really is an individual. And it's about celebrating that person's life. It's not just words. There it is. It's up there on the wall. And that's what I'd want for my mum.
I think that's a very interesting psychological benefit. The ability you can see a person's life on the door. I think that is a terrific exercise. But I think to capture, if that's the only part of their life that they're going to capture, I think that's a wonderful thing, and it should happen more and more. How do people contact you, and how do they and how would they brief you?
How they brief me is that, first of all, contact me through the website, writeforever.com.au, and there'll be a contact page there and also my number. And it's so easy. You don't have to do a lot of preparation. You just chat to me. I'll ask you all the questions that you like. All the questions takes a few minutes, and get to know that person that you're wanting it written about, because it's the information comes not from the person, but from someone who knows them and loves them.
Yes.
So, yes, we can do it on the phone. Alternately, with the homes and groups, I have a form that I send out, and the home then gives that to a loved one of the person who's coming into their care.
Well, I can also see it as a beautiful gift from a family to either one of their parents when they get to a certain age. It might be a sort of 70th or an 80th birthday present.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would make a most delightful gift, and because everyone is unique and therefore totally original, it'll be a joy.
Thank you. Yes.
Now, thank you so much for coming into RPP, and I think we're going to be trying to impose upon you to actually play a slightly greater role in our network here. But we've been told, little things tell me that this might be an opportunity. Listen, we need somebody like you with your writing skills, but as long as we don't interfere with your work, of course. So welcome. You live on the peninsula, obviously.
Yes, I do. I'm in Frankston South, and I love it. And we moved here from London specifically to be on this beautiful peninsula that we both adore.
It's strange, isn't it? Have you done the cliff walk in Mornington? Have you done that cliff walk?
It's gorgeous.
Well, you only got to walk through there and you say, I don't know why I would ever go to Europe. Because it's just, you could be in Corfu, you could be anywhere, couldn't you?
Oh, it's beautiful. Adorable.
All right, my dear, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
I'm going to play a little bit of music. Now, this piece of music is completely different, but I do like it because when we had Anzac Day recently, I placed it there and it reminded me of our great film and a great actor. But it would be something that a number of our people would remember. And it's Lawrence of Arabia's theme. And that was Peter O'Toole, if I remember rightly. So here's a bit of that. It was at this time that I received a telephone call to say that my next interview was not going to happen because the person involved was not very well. That being the case, this was a perfect opportunity for me to revisit an old show and take the great advice we received from our medical expert, Damien Fleming. What does it mean from a medical point of view?
Well, look, generally in aged care assessment, it's about identifying what your physical, your mental and your biological needs really are. So you tend to get a bit of social work involvement for your financial and your home access needs. You get an occupational therapist to identify, is there any limitations of your current accommodation as opposed to your future accommodation and your needs involved in that space. And then you also get the medical one that sort of says what your biometrics are, all your numbers and all your spaces.
So do you start with a GP visit, or what's usually your first step if you're getting one of these assessments? Or is it due to the fact that you have been in hospital and you've had an ailment or an injury that's impacted you?
Look, there's multiple assessment needs and trigger points for people at any point in their healthcare cycles, whether they be 40 or 60 or 90. Mm-hmm. So everyone's got a different level of functioning or coping. Unfortunately, it tends to be a bit of a trigger event. You've had a medical emergency, you might have fractured your hip, you might have had some kidney trouble, or some sort of hospitalization that's triggered that review of what your capacity is to cope at home. And that's a very dangerous word to use in hospital languages because no one likes to feel like they're not coping well. And yes, everyone puts these barriers up to living in retirement villages and nursing homes and the like. But I can say honestly and fairly that the accommodation needs in the community have risen greatly. We've got a lot of nurses that potentially visit you at home, and the ancillary services that are available really do open up the availability of people to maintain their level of functioning at home. But we all need help, and it's about identifying what they are. Right. To answer your question, GPs is normally the first and the best point of call, because if you're not getting to see a GP twice a year, as we've said many times before, it's about maintaining a good relationship that maintains and gives you access to all the resources to make sure you're living the way you want to live.
Mm, that's great, because they're aware of what those services are or who to put you in contact with, etc.
Well, they might start that conversation earlier in the piece, Vic, and that makes it a bit easier for you, because the transition from being completely independent to being completely not independent.
And no one wants to face that, do they?
And no one wants to face that sort of grief. As we've said, the mental health issues are huge, let alone the dependency. You've been independent for 20, 30, 50, 100 years perhaps, and you don't want to give that up just easily.
No, you don't. Now, when you are retired, if we're talking about, you know, those in the retirement life, you no longer have an excuse that, you know, you can't exercise, do you? Because, you know, they say you've got more time. So what are some of the great forms of exercise? And at that time, should I be looking at something brand new, or should I be going back to something I used to do? I mean, I realise our bodies are different as we get older, and how should we get into that sort of exercise routine?
Well, look, there's plenty of physiotherapists, there's plenty of gym and personal instructors that are really engaging with people now in their age to sort of work out, well, what is functionally appropriate? And as young people, we tend to do what we call kettle exercises, which is lifting a huge weight in particular ways.
Oh, a kettlebell.
A kettlebell.
Oh, yes, I know the kettlebell.
You're familiar with the kettlebell, but you know, as a more mature person in the audience, actually a teabag exercise or a tea kettle exercise is just as valuable.
What is that?
Well, it's identical to the kettlebell, but just a bit smaller. It's about weight resistance and weight training. It's understanding what your body's limitations are physically and making sure you participate in it regularly.
I'm not sure that I get a great deal of aerobic quality from lifting a teabag.
Teabag maybe not so, but if you're 90 and a teabag can be enough weight, it's actually the movement. We had a great campaign in the 80s of Norm, Life Be
oh,
In
yes.
It. Just
yep,
get off yep. your bum and get into life. And it doesn't change just because you get older. But we make more excuses and we can become more eloquent in that stage of life to say, oh, maybe not today. But the reality is, if you're not moving every second day for 30 minutes, enough for you to crack enough sweat, to crack a small brow, mm-hmm. Or crack a sweat over your brow even, that's important for you. So I say we talk about kettlebells in gyms, but gyms are friendly for old people as well.
They
resistance
are.
Is the key.
So it's resistance type of workout and going to your level. So are there personal trainers out there that would specialise in older clientele? I'm unsure.
Well, there are absolutely specialists in aged care, but the reality is it's not just aged care. It's working within your limitations. Even as a young, fit 30, 40-year-old, we've all got limitations. Our bodies get a bit older.
That's true.
We identify a few more weaknesses than we used to have at our 20s. And as you get older, I guess there are more limitations. But that's just finding the right exercise that suits you to do your maximum effort.
Right, right. And again, is it good to start something new?
Absolutely.
Right.
We keep saying you've got to do something new that you haven't done before. It gets harder as you get older, but that's no excuse.
Oh. Sport?
Absolutely. Why not?
No, well, I'm spluttering because I don't do any other than which is a shame. But golf and things like that, anything, walking, tennis, just about anything. It's aqua aerobics, all of that.
I was saying to my daughter only earlier today that if you're not having a good laugh at yourself at least once a week, there's something wrong. And laughing is a great exercise. But people tend to hold them back, hold themselves back. Listening to Audible PFM is a great way. And get on a walking, get on a treadmill, maybe even get on an exercise bike.
And what about a Fitbit? Do you think they're really worth...
We've talked a lot about Fitbits. They're fantastic tools if they motivate you to get up and get involved in your life. They're not always accurate, but that's not the point. The point is about being engaged and start having some healthy competition with your colleagues, your friends, your family, and motivate each other. When you get a Fitbit group together, and I'm not just brand specific, there's Garmin and Allstack out there.
Yes.
But when you get a group of people together that can motivate each other to try a little bit harder every other day, I think that's a benefit. So I love them. They have actually found some interesting stuff. Even in our local community, we've had people turn up to the heart department and find out, oh, hang on a second, you've had a little blip along there. And so it does trigger more investigation and more reporting and can save a life. So I'm not going to say they're useless, but they've got limitations.
Yes.
Just like getting out and going for a walk, as the weather gets warmer, walking can be a hazard to most people. Tripping, falling, especially as we get older, are challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe walking on the beach. If you're going to fall or trip, that's a bit easier. You land softer.
Into the sand.
Walking in water is a tremendous resistance exercise that people are going to be able to start taking on in the summer, and increasing that muscle strength, which is what it's about. Resistance against your muscles.
So even walking along in knee-deep or... So water is of benefit to us all, Damien?
Absolutely. The footballers do it, so why shouldn't you at 90 get out there?
Well, I did try aqua aerobics once. I'm opening my way up, my soul here, and I turned up, and there was 40 women and me.
So I'm not seeing the issue there, Brody.
Well, I got in the water, and they were all sort of clapping and things, and they all kept looking at me and smiling.
They were impressed them.
No, they weren't. They were husband hunting.
Oh.
It is a dangerous sport.
I moved right up to the other end of the pool, and eventually I thought, this isn't for me.
You can be endangered in those sporting environments, and I'm told as you get older, there's a lot more to look at. So perhaps, Rody, that is the sport of you, the sport you can choose.
Damien, you're an absolute star. We love having you. We love having you in here. You're so exciting when it comes to medical matters. You make anything sound possible, and if that's coming from me, that's saying something.
I look forward to seeing you down the beach in the aqua aerobics class.
Well, maybe, yeah.
Or maybe just walking in the sand.
And they'll wave back at you too.
So thanks, buddy. We greatly appreciate
Pleasure.
It. Well, that completes this show, and it certainly misses the very clever mind of young Vicky Barber. But have no fear, while she's off in Bali with her family, I'm sure she's doing all the planning for her time while I'm away. Now, as this show is pre-recorded, I have another week before I head off to France and shake my hands with my new grandchild. That's going to be interesting. France in June, how bad can that be? Well, somebody has to do it. But I will be here next week to do the recording. But after that, you will be in the hands of Vicky with the irrepressible Brendan Telfer. So until next week, this is Brody Guzzera reminding you to stay warm and keep a weather eye out for your seniors. Take care out there. Bye.